some questions are on the domestic side.
Please do.
You have received the Educator of the Allentown Educator of the Year Award, even though you're not an educator.
Yes, that's correct.
Where do you, one, tell us what that was for, and two, give us a little bit of your position on the state of education and what you would like to see done about it.
I think, Ellen, that when it comes to domestic issues, like anything else, and in my 30 years in business and nonprofit, you know, work, my profile has always been moving into situations that no one wanted to touch. Looking at problems that are perceived as being intractable and coming up with creative solutions to fix them. And so whether it was when I was working for Bell Atlantic and going into troubled divisions and turning them around, or in my own home city, Allentown, perceiving that we were having a local crisis in education and coming up with creative solutions, public-private partnerships, and solving them with nonprofits, non-tax dollars. And so when we look at the domestic issues, there's sort of a priority order. Clearly, the first thing we have to focus on now domestically is the economic impact of our energy policies.
Mm-hmm.
And the mandate and the imperative, you know, to reduce our dependency on foreign oil, because that has a huge impact on everything from can you afford to go to the grocery store?
Right.
Can you afford to get to work? And is there going to be money in the state and local treasuries to pay for education?
What do you think, before we get to education, what do you think we can do to reduce our dependency on foreign oil?
I think we have to have a very dramatic and well thought out strategy that is extremely bipartisan on this issue, that focuses what I like to call it is Eden's third power. That, and this is a concept, a position paper that, you know, I'm in the process of developing now to share with my other fellow challengers, as we do with the responsible plan to end the war in Iraq. Number one, you cannot separate the mutual interdependency now of energy, the environment, and the economy. These three are mutually interdependent. So any solution for any of them must take into account the other two. And within that, we must have a very aggressive short-term policy that allow people to get to work, that allow people to heat their homes, that allow businesses to remain profitable and allow municipalities not to get bankrupt in state government. Because the cost of oil has this cascading effect on everything, particularly municipal budgets, business bottom lines, and an ordinary household's ability to survive. So we have to have some very intervention-oriented short-term policies to assist at the citizen level, the business level, and the municipal level, state and local. Then we need to, at the same time, chart a course on very strategic long-term investments that the federal government is perfectly positioned to execute and has done exactly the same thing in other periods of our nation's history to set us very squarely on a path of energy interdependence. And that's a term I like to use, Ellen. There's no such thing as energy independence, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there can be healthy interdependence. Right now, we are, because of the failed policy of Dent and Bush, my opponent receives a huge amount of his money from oil and gas companies and their executives and consistently votes with them. That is woefully short-sighted. And Bush has done the same thing as an oil man in the White House, right?
Right.
And what we need to do is set a very aggressive path. A 10-year path is what I'm suggesting, Ellen, of having our energy come from a healthy mix of environmentally and economically sustainable sources global first.
And you say you're working on a paper that would lay this out?
That is correct. And what we've done, because of Dent and Bush's failed policies, we have basically put our whole nation at risk by being dependent on one of the most unstable regions of the world.
Right.
And that is a huge national defense issue. More than anything, it's a national defense issue. Secondarily, it's a huge issue of quality of life for all of our citizens at every level and our ability to deliver that quality of life in the way of social services, which municipalities provide, in the way of goods and services, which businesses provide, and in the way of basic, ordinary, getting to work and being able to buy food. So what I'm suggesting is this 10-year course of action has a very aggressive short-term approach to help us get over the hump, and a very aggressive long-term approach is extremely bipartisan. And one of the key features of it is that we want to assist the current titans of industry, from large auto manufacturers to the same very oil and gas companies, to reinvent themselves so that you're not a car company anymore, you're a transportation company.
Mm-hmm.
You're not an oil company anymore, you're an energy company. And your profits and your bottom line can be directed towards delivering whatever energy makes the most sense at a given period.
Interesting.
Whatever transportation mode is the most efficient one and profitable at a given time. So we have to help those folks re-engineer themselves. And we need to provide firm incentives all across the board, from homeowners to put solar panels on their home to commercial buildings to put green roofs on, right?
Right.
And what we're going to end up with is a huge win-win, because this also represents one of the most powerful economic opportunities our country has seen. This will be an economic opportunity for us in the way of high-paying, skilled jobs and industry dominance in the area of alternative energy manufacturing and efficiency and conservation deployment.
Which sort of brings us back to making sure we have a healthy and educated workforce.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about those two domestic issues, and then we'll wrap up.
What could be more important than educating our citizens? Once we've made sure that they, have basic adequate needs met, right, through their jobs, and we have a healthy economy, what is more important in a global economy but to have the best educated citizens on the planet? So, on a local level, I've been extremely concerned with the inequities in funding for education that exists in our state and nationwide. And that led me to create something called the William Allen Construction Company at our local high school, which is one of the largest high schools in the state of Pennsylvania. A beautiful historic building, Alan. But it was falling into disrepair because the urban school district where my children go to school only has about just under $9,000 to invest per student. Whereas if you go 50 feet in another direction, you have a suburban school district that has over $13,000 to spend per student. And so this high school was falling into disrepair because the maintenance budget had to go to books and paper.
Right. Because we fund our public schools through property taxes.
Correct. So I created the William Allen Construction Company working with a dear friend who's a very staunch Republican and owns one of the largest general construction firms in the country. And we created a construction company in the high school. The students run it. The funding comes from nonprofit and foundation streams. And creating that system in the high school where the students would pick the projects, they would hire the contractors and execute the work. So we have, they're the ones directing the electrical contractors and the painters and all the things to get this work done. Because they've been doing the work, excellent job opportunity for them and learning for them. Excellent position. There's no vandalism. Why? Because they're the ones that executed the work.
Right.
And planned it. And so this is a small example of some of the private, public, projects that I've created to solve some of these seemingly intractable issues. And when we look at the issue of education, not only do we have to take a long, hard look, it's not enough to say we have to get rid of No Child Left Behind. What we have to do is we have to say, where do we want to be as a nation? And what is the best course of action to get there? And where we need to be is to have the best educated citizenry in the world, period. We have the finest universities in the world. They're the envy of the rest of the world. That we've done well. What we have not been able to quite figure out is K through 12. Mm-hmm. And we have to figure it out. And the other thing we have to do is we have to actively engage educators themselves in this process. Who better to help us chart a national course of action than the educators themselves who have dedicated their lives to this? No Child Left Behind has created a number of very significant local crises, including a dramatic increase in the number of teachers who do not stay in teaching, and a greatly reduced number of young people that are going into education, and a huge loss of long-term teachers in the system who have basically opted out to retire early. That is going to create some very significant problems for us in the near term. We need to solve those issues, and we have to look at where do we want to be as a nation, and we have to figure out how to get there, and we need to include the education community in charting that course.
Okay. I know you have someplace else to go, so I'm going to ask you a yes or no question and then one final question. Yes or no question, do you think we should have and do you think we will achieve universal health care?
Yes, I absolutely think we can achieve universal health care. We need to acknowledge that this will, in all likelihood, not be a single-payer system.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm proposing, first of all, I'm saying I will not accept any government underwritten health care until every citizen has access to care that's as good as every member of Congress. It's a moral issue. But I'm also suggesting that we need to write legislation that says everyone must be covered. Every car in America legally must have car insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Every citizen in America must have insurance. And by making that one simple requirement, that is going to immediately lower some of the dramatic offset and distorted costs that are in our system, including, we pay the highest administrative cost of any nation in the world, 30 cents on every dollar.
Well, we could talk about this for a very long time.
We certainly could.
The Massachusetts system will be interesting to watch on that score.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So let me ask you a final wrap-up, which is Congressman Dent is considers himself a centrist Republican, not part of the not part of the extreme right wing. But you are supported by Mayors Pawlowski of Allentown, Callahan of Bethlehem, and Panto of Easton.
Correct.
What do you think they hope for or would expect from a Congressperson Bennett that they do not get from a Congressperson Dent?
A very good question. There is a time, for example, in the Clinton administration where there was where it was acknowledged that the best way to provide quality of life for our citizens was to make sure that they felt safe in their own streets and homes and neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was financial support that was provided to put additional police officers on the street in the Clinton administration.
Right.
That program disappeared under Bush. We need to have a similar program reinstated. Allentown struggles with an increasing crime rate, particularly with gun violence, and so does Easton. In addition to that, they know from me, from my work with Properties of Merit, from my deep involvement in my community, that I get it. I live in the city. My children are educated in the public school system of Allentown. We are deeply involved in the life of the third largest in the state of Pennsylvania, and those mayors know that we cannot be healthy as a congressional district without our cities being healthy. And I'm a real believer, Ellen, in the only kind of leadership is leadership by example. And by me being a congressperson that lives in the city, educates my children in a public urban school district with a number of challenges, that I will be a congressman that will know day in, day out what their issues are and can work collaboratively with them to solve some of the challenges they have. Because unless our cities are healthy, our suburbs and rural areas will not be healthy either.
Well, as the daughter of a math teacher in the Philadelphia Public Schools for 35 years, I couldn't agree with you more.
And if I could, I'm sure you're aware of this. We did receive the endorsement of the Joint Action Committee.
Okay.
That's
and great.
And also J Street.
Terrific. Terrific.
And my treasurer, that's a wonderful woman, one of the most preeminent women in the Jewish community. Her name is Jeanette Eichenwald.
That's
and
great.
She is the head of the Jewish and Christian Center for Understanding at Millbrook College.
Terrific. Okay, here's my last question. Pronounce your name for me. Not Sam.
Siobhan.
Siobhan?
Just grab my first. Yeah, Siobhan. It's an Irish name. Nobody can pronounce.
That's not so hard. Okay, I'm going to turn off my recorder.
Okay.
And hang on for one.